I'm Jeff Simon, and this is the second half of our excursion through the St. John Passion of Johann Sebastian Bach. I'd like to pick up today at the very end of part one of this work. And before I do, I want to fill in one gap that I think I missed yesterday. I mentioned that there was probably at least one Passion account that Bach set that was lost, but I don't think I made clear that what we have left are two settings. We have the one that we're listening to yesterday and today, according to St. John, and there is also Bach's setting of the account as it's found in St. Matthew's Gospel. That particular work is on an even larger scale than the St. John in terms of its length and its performing forces. It lasts close to 3 hours, just about the traditional length of a Traore service on Good Friday. And the St. Matthew account is scored for double chorus and double orchestra. Now, just a little bit more background in terms of the instruments that that Bach used. His standard large orchestra was 21 people. We know that because he left a very carefully worked out memo to the church council in Leipzig saying, here is what I need for a well-regulated church music. And it consisted of two first violins, two second violins, two violas, two cellos and a bass, two flutes, two oboes, and for festival occasions, three trumpets and timpani. And with those 21 instruments, you can do almost anything that Bach ever wrote. I have performed the B minor Mass, for instance, with those 21 instruments and 21 singers. I've performed this work that we're listening to with 12 singers, admittedly 12 good singers, but 12 singers and an orchestra of 17 or 18. 18 counting the lute that you have to have for one movement of the Johannes Passion. So it wasn't a large group, and that can give some hope to Bach performances today where we have to worry about budgets. You don't have to hire an entire symphony orchestra in order to do a Bach cantata. I'd like to pick up with the story as it brings to a conclusion the first part of this work, where we hear Peter's denial of Christ. And at the end of this recitative, you will hear one of the most poignant passages in the work, where the text says, and Peter, realizing what he had done, goes out and, depends on how you want to translate, und weinete bitterlich, and lamented, bewailed. Lamented is probably as close as we can come. And you'll hear in a very long musical setting of that one word, und weinete, it goes on and on, very, very chromatic, close together notes in the vocal part and in the cello part underneath. Remembering, as we mentioned yesterday, that those close together chromatic passages generally mean something unhappy or bad, and here you have them just all over the place. So this is the text where the evangelist begins by saying that Peter swears again, I am not one of Christ's disciples. And you'll hear the servant of the high priest saying, you were one of those who was in the garden with him. And Peter says for the third time, I am not, and then you hear just a very brief five-note passage in the cello where the text says, and immediately the cock crew, and you hear a bum, 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 bum. Not quite as effective as the same place in the Matthew Passion where I think the sound of the cock crowing is even more musically presented, but still effective. And I think the record is right at the right spot here. We'll try it. Almost. This is where they are asking, aren't you one of them? Didn't I see you in the garden with That's the cock crowing. Now Peter remembers the words of Jesus and goes out. Line. And that's followed by an aria in which we are confronted with what Peter must have been thinking after he went out and lamented and realized the gravity of what he had done in his denial. The connection is again made between what Peter thought as he denied his Lord and what we think when we are confronted with the same kind of situation in our own lives. The text, "Ah, my mind, where finally will you go? Where shall I revive myself? Where shall I finally go? Shall I stay here, or do I wish the mountains and the hills behind me? In this world I find no good counsel, and in my heart are the sorrows of my misdeed, for the servant has denied his Lord." And this is a different mood of aria. It's a rather impassioned sound. We can't hear all of it, but I'll let you hear just the beginning part of it so that you get an idea of the intensity that is represented in the realization of denial.
Oh, no.
that long note we just nubbed. Bleib ich hier. Shall I stay here? When you get to that note, you stay there for an entire measure plus a little bit more. And he repeats that same little graphic illustration of shall I stay here, or where can I go to get away from myself? How can I escape the realization of what I've done? And he finally realizes that he can't. Then the first part closes with a chorale. And it is one of the great strengths of the St. John Passion that both the first half and the very conclusion of the entire work end with the congregation's music, as it were, with the chorale. This text, Peter needlessly denies his God, but in an earnest moment he weeps bitterly. Jesus, look also on me if I atone not. If I have done evil, ease my conscience. And musically, when the text says, wenn ich Böses hab getan, when I have done, or if I have done evil, Bach comes to a cadence which does not really belong in the key of the chorale which is being sung. So he commits a musical evil of going far away from where he's supposed to be going, and yet in the next phrase comes out where he's supposed to be again. So this is the conclusion of the first part of the St. John Passion. He did it by simply breaking one of the standard musical rules of his time, which were pretty strict. There were things you just didn't do, and he did them purposefully, and then brought things right again before the end of the particular section of the piece. The second part of the work has some of the most picturesque imagery and symbolism. And the first place that I want to look at is the chorus, where the crowd is saying, if this man were not an evildoer, we would not have brought him to you. To you, meaning to the high priest. And you'll hear the evildoer represented again by chromaticism, long lines, and the not, we would not have brought him to you. At the end of the chorus, you'll hear the word nichts repeated by the entire chorus all at once, four or five times in a row. Nichts, 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 nichts. So it's very obvious exactly what is being said. Then they brought Jesus to the house of judgment. Then Pilate comes to him and says, why do you bring this man to me? Says, you take him and try him according to your law. And they're saying, it is not lawful for us to condemn a person to death according to our law. Then you remember that Pilate says, I do not find any fault in this man. He says, I will have him scourged. And the next place that I want you to hear is what that scourging sounds like musically. This is right after a four-measure chorus, where the chorus says, not this man, but Barabbas, in answering the question about who should Pilate release, Jesus or Barabbas. So I'll try to find those four measures, and that's followed by the evangelist singing the text, Barabbas was a murderer. And the notes that are used for the word ein murder, it's only two syllables and it's only two notes. The two notes happen to be those that ever since the Middle Ages were known as the devil in music, the diabolus in musica. It was an interval that you never wrote during the Middle Ages. In fact, it's the place where our system of having what we call accidental sharps and flats in music came from. It was to avoid this particular interval. In this case, it happens the other way around. It happens from the top note down to the bottom. This is one of those places where the singers and composers intuitively recognize what we can now analyze mathematically, and we can explain why they avoided that interval. It's the farthest out interval in terms of mathematics that it's possible to have within our particular musical system. It has a very complex mathematical ratio. They didn't know any of that, and they didn't need to know any of that. What they knew was it's a hard set of notes to sing, and it has an unsettling sound because it's incomplete. You always want another note at the end of it. Yes, sir?
Going back to the history of this type of music, way back you have the wandering minstrels or troubadours that have very simple instruments. You have Gregorian chants, and then you have Bach's music. At least that's all I know about. I'm probably missing a lot because I'm not a student of that type of thing. But does Bach become possible because of an evolution in musical instruments?
Yes, it comes through. You've got a fairly wide period between the Gregorian flame song and Bach, because in between that you have the Renaissance music, in which the number of parts increased. Instead of having just one melodic line, you grew to two, three, four, and more. In the High Renaissance, would have sometimes 16 parts at once, and so this was, yes, but it is a gradual evolution, definitely. And one of Bach, in his own time, was considered to be an old fuddy-duddy. That is, he was composing in a style which was already archaic.
Well, really, he wasn't really revolutionary.
Not at all, no. Bach is considered, in fact, the Baroque period, you always try to find dates for beginnings and endings of things, and usually they're chosen more for convenience than because you can actually date a particular time. But the Baroque period generally dates from 1600, which was the time of the very first excursions into opera in Italy, and the time of Monteverdi, to the death of Bach, 1750. And that's the end of that period. And Bach's sons, who were composers, were already composing in the new style of the period, which was the early style of which Mozart and Haydn are the final exponents, the so-called classic style. So, and music, like everything else, is always in an evolution, and it also tends to go back and repeat itself now and then. So this place now will be the short chorus answering Pilate's question about who should I release to you, and they say, not this man, nicht diesen, sondern Barabbas. And then the recitative in which the evangelist says Barabbas was a murderer, and then Pilate takes Jesus and scourges him. The word in German is geißelte. And you'll find, well, I don't need to say anything at all about it. I think you'll hear it very clearly. Yes. Shall I crucify your king?
Father,
you can not only hear that, if you have the music in front of you, you can't see it from here, you can just see the tails of the whip on that ya ta 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 ta, and you can hear the incessant blows as the voice sings that passage. Then the next place that I'd like to share with you is a tenor aria. Get all my notes in front of me at the same time so I can find it, find which side of the record it's on. I think it's still this one. This is one aria removed from what you've just heard. The intervening one is a contemplative bass aria where the text says, "Consider, O my soul, with fearful joy, with bitter anguish in your heart afflicted, that your highest good is Jesus' sorrow. For you, from the thorns that pierce him, what heavenly flowers spring. You can the sweetest fruit from his wormwood gather, then look forevermore to him." And that's a very quiet, subdued aria in which the accompaniment is provided by a lute. And here Bach is going back to the Renaissance style, where the lute was the standard accompanimental instrument. And then the connection is made between Christ's sacrifice and the promise in the Old Testament of the rainbow. Remember the rainbow? And there is a musical rainbow in this aria. The text says, "Lord Jesus, your bitter pain and sorrow restores us to joy and sets the sinner free. With fear and trembling, it afflicts me to see his holy body wounded, and yet with gratitude it fills me, for I am saved from hell and death." And that's poetic. That's the trouble with these. I've got to get back to the original, because that doesn't even mention the rainbow. And this, by the way, if you ever buy recordings, you have to check as you go along, and if you don't understand the language, get somebody who does to check and see whether or not the text is a translation or a paraphrase. More often than not, you'll find it's a paraphrase that is often pretty far removed from the real thing. They've cleaned it up a little, or they've done a singing translation, and it doesn't mean the same thing. Part of the text that deals with the rainbow is, if I can find it here, "After the waves of our flood of sin have receded," this is again a connection back to the flood in Noah's time, "the most beautiful rainbow stands as God's sign of grace." The first part of the text is, "Consider how Jesus' blood-stained back is in all ways like heaven. After the waves of our flood of sin have receded." It's likening the red stripes on the back to the rainbow as a promise of salvation. You see, and that through Jesus' scourging and death, our salvation came. So the rainbow musically is depicted by a very long, long line, and I'll pass this music around while this is going on so you can see it. I'll have it open to the page, and you'll see If you just follow the vocal line, what is a very difficult line to sing because it goes on for measures and measures and measures, and you have to hunt for a place to breathe. And it's there. These are the waves that he's talking about, the waves of sin. They sort of go just like waves, and again, you can see them if you look at the notes. Some cases in the cantatas, we know who the authors were. It was the practice in the early to mid 18th century for poets, sometimes pastors, to write librettos for cantata texts. And we know in perhaps a quarter of the cases of the cantatas who the author was of the libretto that Bach set. But we're not sure, in terms of the Passion accounts, whether or not Bach himself had anything to do with these non-scriptural texts, or whether he may have done some of them. In general, he preferred to set texts which other people had put together, and he did not think of himself as a poet.
So then they can start out with the text and then write the music.
Oh, always, yeah, yeah. And that's the only way to get this kind of tight relationship between the two. The next place that I'd like to look at is another short chorus. The text is that where the crowd is saying, "We have a law, and by that law, he must die." Wir haben ein Gesetz. Now, musically speaking, if you're going to write a law, it's got to be a strict kind of a piece. So Bach writes a rather pedantic fugue. It's not an imaginative piece. It's a very, according to the book, this is how you write a fugue. And that's what he does to illustrate we have this law. That should be just at the end of this side. Sorry about that. Well, it's a light needle. But I'll let you hear a little bit of that, because that is the one word chorus. The word is Kreuzige, crucify. And it's just repeated, repeated, repeated with the increasing intensity. Here it is. About as fast as you can say the word. Kreuzige, 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 Kreuzige. Pilate said to them, "You take him and crucify him. I find no guilt in him." And then the chorus, where the Jews answer and say, "We have a law." Here it is. Just a very, as I said, pedantic, straightforward fugue, musical law, as it were. Then, just trying to get through all this in this amount of time is doing a lot of damage to the music, but I hope what I'm doing is whetting your appetite to listen to the whole thing when you have the opportunity. There is an unusual aria with participation by the chorus after Jesus is led away bearing his cross to Golgotha. The bass sings the text, "Eilt ihr angefochtenen Seelen," hurry you deeply wounded spirits. Go on your own way of martyrdom. Hurry. And the chorus interrupts and says, "Wohin, wohin, where?" And he answers, Nach Golgotha, to Golgotha. Take the wings of faith and fly. And they interrupt, fly where? To the cross. Your oder Wohlfahrt blüht all da. Your well-being, your redemption blooms there. And that, if you want to go back to Jung, as I mentioned some Jung yesterday, that takes you back to one of the earliest archetypal images that you'll find in human history, which is that of the tree of life. And here the cross is referred to as blooming, though it becomes no longer the cut wood, but it blooms again as it becomes the symbol of redemption. So this is then the aria, Eilt ihr angefochten Seelen. And you'll hear, by the rapid movement of this group, you'll hear the hurrying that is being implored.
Thank you.
rapidly creeping up on us. There are two more places to illustrate. One is the alto aria, Es ist vollbracht, after Jesus says, It is finished. There is a reflection on that. The text says, It is finished, O rest for all afflicted spirits. The night of sorrow makes me think about my own last hour. The hero from Judah triumphs with strength or with power and ends the fight. At that particular point of the text, there's a complete change of mood in the music from a very sorrowful one to a triumphant mood, and then it returns to the it is finished text. We'll hear that, and then we'll jump to the very last movement of the work. Let me just say what I have to say about it now so I don't have to interrupt it. In the Matthew Passion, Bach ends with a chorus which is in effect a lullaby. As Jesus is placed in the tomb and the chorus sings, Rest well, ruht wohl. In the St. John Passion, there is a corresponding chorus, but it doesn't end there. And that, again, is the greatness of this work, I think. It ends with the text, Ach, Herr, lass dein lieb Engelein am letzten Tag die Seele mein zu Abraham Schoß tragen. O Lord, at my last hour, send your lieb Engelein, it's a marvelous imagery, your dear little angel to carry my soul to Abraham's bosom. It lies in its little chamber of sleep, all quiet, without any sorrow or pain, asleep until the everlasting morning. So then, at the everlasting morning, from death awaken me that my eyes may see you in all joy, O Jesus Christ. Let me refresh my memory on that text. That my eyes may see you in all joy, O Son of God, my Savior and my throne of grace. Lord Jesus, hear me, I will praise you eternally. And that's where this ends, with the hymn of praise. It ties together the entire Passion account. And on the personal level, that because of Christ's passion, we have eternal life. Because of out of death comes life for us. It is fulfilled, es ist vollbracht, aria. Thank you. Let you forget that the "it is finished" is not the end. He reminds you immediately that this is, in fact, ultimate triumph. And then here is the closing chorale, which ends the work. That you could end a 2-hour drama with a chorale. You'd say, no, it's not possible dramatically. You'd have to have a big, big chorus with lots of fugues and complex things. But it worked. This is the recording by Nicholas Harnoncourt, the conductor with the Concertus Musicus of Vienna. It won the Grand Prix de Disque. It's on Telefunken. This is the one where the instruments are either actual 18th century instruments or copies thereof, and the performing forces are exactly the same style and size that Bach had at his disposal. So I hope you will get opportunity to listen to the entire piece. And I would encourage you, to to yourselves encourage a live performance. The big tragedy of Bach's works now is you don't get to hear them where they were intended to be heard, which is in church. You have to go to the concert hall to hear the St. John Passion. And that's not where it belongs. It belongs in the midst of God's congregation at worship. I would also suggest allow or encourage your singers to do it in the original language, and then provide one of these things, that is a word book that has the words in the original and in a literal translation. The problem with the singing it in English is you lose so many of these word-music relationships, because it's just not possible in a singing translation to always have the word that means exactly the same show up under the same notes. So you lose a lot of what's really in there. Let it be sung in the original language. Make sure everybody has in front of them exactly what it means, and then you have, I think, the best of all possible worlds. I thank you very much for your attention, and I hope you'll listen to it in its entirety. Yes, sir. You have a question? Okay. I saw your hand.